We are Rogue Media Sports.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
It is time for the Doomsday Podcast, Thanksgiving edition. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Happy Thanksgiving to Ed Werder. And Ed, always fun, man. We were together today in the press box, and then an extended, you know, Jerry doesn't mind talking for a while because of a story that came out in the Washington Post, which we're not going to get all into that because we kind of know what our listeners want out of the Doomsday Podcast. But the post game went for a very long time, and Ed, at an appropriate time, after you had kind of let that conversation run its course, and it has to do with a photo that's come out in Washington Post of Jerry when he was 15 years old, and it
a 65-year-old photograph.
Yeah, I know, and and it was interesting though to hear the conversation, because I do think Jerry thought it was maybe going on for a little bit too long, but then as only Jerry could. I thought he was kind of challenging one of the reporters that kept asking him about it. Like, is that enough? Is that enough? Do you need more? And then the reporter, to his credit, said, well, yeah, I'd like to talk a little more. And then so people huddled around him for probably another 30 minutes where Jerry talked about it. And so anyway, if you can read the story in the Washington Post, and it is an interesting thing, but again, we're going to kind of keep it to the game tonight. And at some point after we talked about some of that, Ed leaned in and said, Jerry, what exactly did you ask him, Ed?
Wow. Because
Jerry gave a pretty quick answer, and then I think everybody else standing there was kind of like, wait, are we talking about Odell Beckham Jr. now?
I wasn't as interested as some other reporters present were about the Washington Post story and Jerry's explanations about the 65-year-old photograph of him standing at a school outside in Little Rock, where some black students were not being allowed in because of their race. Jerry said he was there basically because of curiosity, and he didn't realize the magnitude of the moment. I thought he spent a lot of time providing a lot of detail. He was very tolerant of the line of questioning. I thought he got emotional at times, quite honestly. I think he recognized the seriousness of every word he spoke to these questions he was asked. And as it did run its course, and I felt everything had been asked fully and he had been cooperative, I felt like never was there such a good time to introduce another subject that ordinarily Jerry might not want to talk about, but might do so at length to avoid continuing the dialogue he was currently having. And so I said, Jerry, where are you with Odell Beckham Jr.? There was a report from Jay Glazer today on Fox that the Cowboys are going to meet with him on Monday, December the 5th. And Jerry said he spoke to Odell Beckham Jr. today. He would not say whether it was in person, but upon further questioning it, I got the sense that it was on the phone. He would not characterize it in any way. He would not give a timeline as to when they're going to meet. And I thought maybe the most interesting point that was raised about Odell Beckham Jr. and the Cowboys was when Jerry was asked, how sure are you that medically, physically, he's going to be able to play this year? Because he's coming off his second ACL surgery. He had his ACL surgery a month after Michael Gallup had his ACL surgery. And you can see where Michael Gallup is. I mean, he's still trying to get back to being the player that he was. Even now, all these weeks later, he's been playing 6-7 weeks. And Jerry said he doesn't know that. And he doesn't have the resources right now to make that kind of decision. That's part of the reason they want to bring him in, is They want to give him a physical. They want a clearer understanding of where he is in his recovery. They need to have a conversation with the coaches about how he fits into their system and what his role might be. And I think they also have to have a long conversation about the contract demands and their willingness to do a multi-year deal, as he stated he wants. So that was interesting. And then Dak was asked about it. He's told Jerry spoke to Odell Beckham Jr. today. And Dak said, "Oh, today?" And then he said, "Wow, he's not going to stop, is he?" And then he said, "Oh, that's a good thing." And then Dak actually said what I thought he was going to say earlier in the week when he was asked about it, which is, "Hey, I like the guys we have. We're doing pretty well with the guys that we have." And he's not entirely wrong about that. But if Odell Beckham Jr. is healthy, maybe he could make a difference in the Cowboys' Super Bowl chances, maybe like a Charles Haley did, maybe like a Deion Sanders did. Remains to be seen. And Jerry, quite honestly, to his credit, said he couldn't make that determination quite yet either. But it is interesting that they have gone out and either traded for, in the case of Charles Haley, a pass rusher who Jerry says it couldn't have spelled Super Bowl without. And they went out and signed Deion Sanders as an unrestricted free agent after they lost Kevin Smith in the opener in 1995. So a lot of interesting stuff there. And Jerry spoke to a couple of different subjects.
Yeah, I would say so. And at great length. And at some point, Ed, the waiting game on Dak became so long that I told you, Ed, I think you have this. I'm going to run up to our suite and get ready and get ready for our podcast. Now, a shout out, by the way, to Jim and Sally Nation, two great friends of mine. In fact, their son, Greg, and I went to school together, and they have a suite on the silver level here at AT&T Stadium, and let us use their suite after games to tape our podcast. And we were so appreciative. And Ed, you're having a nice Pepsi right now. I believe that is on the house. That is the Nation family left that behind for us. So we're appreciative of that. And we're going to get into some of the game. But first, I'd like to ask Mark Frito Friedman of Frito Nation Productions, please play the music. And it is Doomsday Podcast, Thanksgiving style. And Ed's a guy who likes to kind of, he'll do his Thanksgiving maybe a night before, spend a little time with the family. And then once it's game day, Ed is all in on it and has been focused since this morning. And then he'll go see some of the family this evening. But Ed, I especially poignant day for you. You know, having lost your dad recently, anyway, just our thoughts have been with you today, because that's these holidays. Although knowing you, you kind of, as almost a tribute to your dad, kind of put your head down and worked right through all of that. And certainly we'll take the time to celebrate and remember your dad. But I think these times aren't easy. These days aren't easy. And I think for you, Ed, this has been maybe, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but maybe somewhat therapeutic in working through everything to just kind of keep working and come to these holidays. But a day like today, I'm sure there were moments where you were very reflective on not having your folks around.
Yeah, I remember, as I posted on Twitter, you know, so many Thanksgiving days when I was a kid and, you know, my mom's cooking, filling the house, and the anticipation of having this great, you know, family meal and sharing a lot of laughs, as we did at every meal. And then, you know, while she'd be cooking, my dad and I, my brother, we'd be watching games on TV. I remember, you know, watching the Clint Longley play on TV with my family. And so, yeah, it's been 10 years without my mom now, and this is my first Thanksgiving without my dad. And you're right, I do prefer to just work my way through it. And that's what he would want me to do. And I've done that really since he passed away about 6 weeks ago. But there are a lot of times when I'm around football and when I'm watching games where I think, oh, I wonder if my dad saw that play, or I wonder if he knows this happened, or I gotta send him this information about his team, is the Raiders. And so I miss all that. But I know that he introduced me to this game and sports in general. And he had a great work ethic, and I want to honor him by doing my job to the best of my ability.
Well, I appreciate you and appreciate everything that that you do on these busy days and what you've done these last few weeks. You'll hear some things, by the way. Folks are cleaning up around AT&T Stadium. They probably wish Ed and I would move on out of the stadium, but we have to tape this podcast because it's what we do. Ed, let's start from the beginning. Cowboys end up winning this thing going away as the score's not totally reflective of what it was because the Giants scored kind of a late, meaningless touchdown, and I suppose they had a onside kick that meant something, but it was 28-20. I think it maybe meant something for the people that were betting on the game, depending on what line you had on it. But let's start in the first half. I mean, at halftime, Cowboys are down 13-7, and much like what happened in the Packers game, or was it the game? I mean, it's honestly happened too often this year. Dak had two interceptions in the first half. One of them, the defense, stood up and really did his job. But Ed, it is concerning. While he ended up having a pretty good day, and he's been pretty good the last couple of weeks, and you know, he had a lot of long, the passing game was pretty good today. But it's troubling. And boy, some people around here get very upset if you say anything negative about Dak, which is odd because we've been doing this for decades now, going back to Don Meredith. But I would say that comeback route in the first half, that's very concerning that a guy with this much experience and this kind of veteran, this kind of leader is still doing things like that. And I would just say right now, I mean, this team's on a roll. They're 8-3. But if you're going to have some concerns coming out of this game, I would go back to another couple of interceptions from the quarterback.
Well, it was an interesting game because, 5 days ago, the Cowboys went to Minnesota and dominated in all three phases and produced the biggest, most one-sided victory in the entire league with their 37-point historic road win at Minnesota, which was, went into the game 8-1. Now tonight they're playing, a 7-3 Giants team. Mike McCarthy makes what I thought was a foolish decision to go for it on fourth down and one on their first possession on their own end of the field, the 40-yard line. I mean, I don't think you do that when you're at home and you have the more talented team. I can see the Giants doing that. I mean, this is a team decimated by injury. They're missing three offensive line starters, both their starting corners, safety. So the Cowboys were by far the more talented team today. So I thought that was a huge mistake, and it did give the Giants a lead. And then, Prescott threw two first-half interceptions, just like he did in Green Bay. And what's interesting about watching the game and then listening to him afterward is he's so aware of how good this defense is. He has such enormous respect for this defense's ability to win games. And so it's kind of odd, given that recognition, that he's careless with the football in a way that, he hasn't usually been that way. He's always valued the ball and seldom put it in jeopardy like Romo did early in his career. And yet he's, the comeback route was poorly thrown. The throw to the middle of the field, the CeeDee Lamb again is a ball he's thrown multiple times where the receiver simply not open and doesn't have much of a chance of catching the ball. But just overall, I mean, they played a bad half. You could argue they played a bad game and they still won decisively. So is that impressive in any way? I mean, they were -2 in turnover margin. This is only the third time with Dak as a quarterback that they were -2 in turnover margin and still won. They were 2-14 with Dak as a starting quarterback in games where they were -2 or worse in turnover margin. When he's thrown multiple interceptions, as he did again today, they were 3-11 in those games. They had 13 penalties today. That's the most they've had in any game this season. Only two other teams, Jacksonville and Denver, have had 13 penalty games, and you know how bad they are. So it was not a great performance. Maybe you understand it because they were at Minnesota, quick turn, but they should have been way better Then the Giants, who, you know, played at home last week. They were traveling on a short week and, you know, as I mentioned, compromised by injuries at a lot of different key positions. So it's hard to look at this team and say, hey, that's a bad team or a bad win, but because they won a game that normally they would lose statistically, as I just pointed out.
That is interesting. So their record improves now, and they've got three wins in those kind of games. You would rather them not continue to put themselves in that situation. Ed, before we move on, I did want to recognize, especially on this special Thanksgiving show, Marable Homes, our presenting sponsor this year, just tremendous sponsor. Blake Marable just does an incredible job. Family-owned custom home builder, building timeless classic homes in the Dallas area. Great team equipped to handle luxury residential new construction. And what we're hearing is, in addition to, he started where he lives, which is Lake Islands. And there happened to be some just gorgeous homes going up in Lake Islands, and he's doing most of them. And what's happening is people from Preston Hollow and Highland Park and other places where they listen to us are finding out about these, and they're like, wait, we want him to build a house in our neighborhood. Ed, I don't know if they've heard of it in Flower Mound yet, but that word will get out there in your neighborhood soon. But it is MarableHomes.com. On Twitter, it's at Marable Homes, and then on Instagram, at Marable Homes as well. It's M-A-R-A. B-L-E, and he's just a great guy. And one of the great things is all the people who work for them, all their subs and however all that stuff comes together, they're like have these great friendships with. So there's not like, oh, so-and-so didn't show up today. These people are like really close to them, and they like hang out with them and spend time with them. And so these people are extremely loyal. So if you're wanting a place that has it together when they build you a home, this is the place to do it, Marable Homes. And let's continue on the offensive side of the ball. I get the interesting today, Pollard has been a star. They each had two touchdowns in that in the last game against Minnesota. That was a blowout. Today's game, it kind of flip-flopped. It's not that Pollard was bad. It's just that Zeke was more effective. He found bigger holes. He ended up with a bigger day. And so I think that's kind of healthy that, you know, Pollard's still your home run back. And I think he's still the most capable of breaking a game open. But to have a day where Zeke gets up there in the 80 or 90 yard range, I think is a very healthy thing for this offense.
Well, it's interesting because it is really the first time that Zeke has been the more dominant player and has outproduced anytime recently Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard came into this game, you know, he had all three of the Cowboys 100 yard rushing performances. In fact, he still does because Zeke came up just a little short. But he had an active streak of four consecutive 100-yard games from scrimmage because last week he had 100 yards receiving. And Zeke got very close to 100 yards, which he hasn't done in a very long time. He hasn't had a 100-yard game in his last 20 games. So it's been a real long time since we've seen Ezekiel Elliott be the dominant player that he was in the run game today. It's still odd to me. You know, the first two series, the Cowboys don't have the guy in who just won – offensive player of the week. Like, you know, Tony Pollard's like tapping McCarthy on the sidelines during the first two series saying, hey, you know, I won that award they give to the best player in the league, in the whole league. I won that last week. Maybe I should get a carry or two, or I should take a rep. What do you think? But yeah, it's encouraging. I mean, the great thing, and I asked about it out there, and, you know, people on Twitter have criticized me for asking the question, and they think you're trying to provoke the situation. But I honestly was out there trying to report the fact that these two guys get along so well, and that what a magnanimous thing it is that Ezekiel Elliott, who's in the last year of his guaranteed money, who's won two NFL rushing championships, has no issues whatsoever with sharing his playing time evenly with Tony Pollard. You know, that Zeke just wants to win, and he wants to win it all, and he recognizes Tony Pollard's value in trying to accomplish that goal. But people think just because you ask the question, you're trying to stir it up out there. And that that wasn't my intent at all. And I think it all reflected very positively on the type of player Ezekiel Elliott is. But he can still be a factor, clearly. We've seen it several times now.
Now, the running game was fine. Passing game got going. I think the best sign is Gallup was really good. Made some really nice catches. And, of course, CeeDee Lamb had a big day. And so this is a team that, you know, we continue to talk about Odell Beckham Jr. Obviously, you can't do tampering when somebody's on another team. But this guy's not on another team, so you can talk about him as much as you want.
And they do. Nobody talks about him more than this locker room.
They constantly talk about him. But to the credit of Gallup and CeeDee Lamb, you know, they don't seem to kind of like take it any kind of personally like that. Everybody's pining away for, oh, we got to have another. But to your point from earlier, I did kind of sense that Dak finally today kind of thought, golly, all this OBJ talk, I might ought to point out that we got some pretty good receivers and that we're doing okay in that area. And the good news is, where in the past they've sort of tried to add things to a team that's like, well, this guy's not going to make that big a difference. This does feel like a team that maybe one, you know, dynamic type player like that could get you over the hump. And part of this analysis, Ed, of everything about the Cowboys, the passing game, running game, defense, part of why the Cowboys seem, and you'll hear Stretch talk about this in a minute, and why he thinks this is the best Cowboys team in a lot of years, is simply because the rest of the NFC, there's nothing clear cut. We watch a game the other night and go, oh, wait, maybe the 49ers are the best team in the NFC, even though there's another team that's 10-1 in the Cowboys' own division. So I think that's a part of what's driving this OBJ thing, is they sense like an incredible opportunity this season because there's no clear-cut great team in the NFC.
Yeah.
And so, in effect, why not the Cowboys?
And I think part of it is, too, that the front office wants to make a contribution. They want to do something. You know, the executive wing wants to do something that will make these guys believe that they're behind them. And maybe it's motivated by the fact that they did something so detrimental to this whole cause and to their own quarterback when they traded Amari Cooper in the offseason for nothing, essentially. They traded him for nothing, and they drafted a guy in Jalen Tolbert, who has not contributed in the way that they expected. And so they certainly could use another receiver. Now, that being said, I think it's worth noting that the Cowboys are 4-1 since Dak Prescott came back from his thumb surgery. They're averaging an NFL best 33.8 points per game. That's two more than anybody else. The Bengals are next, then the Chiefs, then the Dolphins. And where they went 8 straight games to start the season without a 100-yard receiver, you know, CeeDee Lamb's now had 2 of those in his last 3 games. And Michael Gallup went over 50 yards for the first time since he's come back from his ACL surgery. But I still feel like they're not a real explosive team. You know, I think last week they played around the receivers by using Tony Pollard and the running backs. And today I think they played around it with the tight ends. You know, they got 4 tight ends that they trust. And Dalton Schultz had his 3rd multi-touchdown game. And Dak obviously has a lot of trust in Dalton Schultz. But you're not going to get a lot of dynamic play out of those guys either. You can score with them in close, but they're not going to get, you know, vertical down the field and create a lot of explosive plays. And ultimately, this game is a lot about being able to create explosive plays.
It is. And, you know, CeeDee Lamb, by the way, it's a 2nd 100-yard game of the season. And it's come recently after going a long time without the Cowboys having anybody over 100 yards. Pollard did it last week. Gallup, as I mentioned, 5 catches for 63 yards. Ed, before we look at the defense and before we get to Stretch, do you love a good red kettle celebration? And the tight ends had a little fun Hendershot. And old Ferguson with a beautiful hurdle. I mean, this guy.
And then ran over the second defender.
What an athletic move that was. This is a fourth round pick, I believe, from out of Wisconsin. And yeah, you're right. He ran over the next guy. And so some dynamic stuff coming from your tight ends. But three of the tight ends, after one touchdown, Hendershot on a little jet sweep to the tight end, which is a nice play. Maybe borrowed from my alma mater, by the way. Baylor loves a good tight end.
I thought it came from the Chiefs, but okay, maybe you're right.
We're going to take it from Jeff Grimes at Baylor. But they jumped into those oversized kettles, and then the celebration was the whack-a-mole celebration. Ed, did you ever take the kids over to Showbiz or Chuck E. Cheese and let them get in there and do a little whack-a-mole? And did you enjoy the Salvation Army celebration today?
I absolutely did take the kids and do that, and I've taken Henry to do that as well. I know that, you know, Zeke Elliott was asked during the week, because he famously jumped into the kettle 2 or 3 years ago and got fined and drew a penalty. And so he was asked about doing that again to create awareness about their fundraising effort here at the holidays. And Zeke said, we might do it again, but we have to make sure that we have a big enough lead that the penalty that they're going to call on us doesn't hurt the team. So Dak said today after the game that the tight ends had talked to him about what they wanted to do to celebrate a touchdown. And Dak assured them it was okay with him as long as they had at least a 14-point lead. And don't worry about the fine. We got some guys who make enough to help you out there. So it was very meticulously planned. And they didn't get a penalty. They didn't get a penalty this time. So I assume there'll be no fine either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought it was entertaining. It was entertaining. And, you know, one more point about the tight ends. The Cowboys have 5 receiving touchdowns from tight ends since week 6. That's tied with the Chiefs, who have Travis Kelce, one of the most dynamic players in the whole league at tight end. And the Bears, for 2nd in the league, only the Saints with Taysom Hill have more touchdown receptions by tight ends since week 6 than the Cowboys do. So there's a perfect example of just how dominant they have been featured in this offense, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, and I don't even know if I totally count him as such, but I think, you know, maybe technically we can do that. But and I asked Jerry if he sanctioned, if they asked him if it was okay if they did the jumping in the kettle. And what's funny about Jerry is Jerry likes having a funny time and likes, you know, cutting up a little bit. But when you try to ask him like a fun Salvation Army question, have you noticed he gets pretty serious? He's like, well, here's what I think about the Salvation Army. And I'm like, wait, we're just talking about the guys who jumped in the kettle. We're not talking about like the seriousness of all of that. But Ed, it is time now to go to a very popular segment on the Doomsday Podcast. And it involves, and of course it'll involve, Ed, as you'll hear, our one of our new sponsors. Welcome back, Miller Lite. But it's time for Stretch Plays with Glenn Stretchsmith. You see him on WFAA Channel 8 TV every Sunday night at 10:30 after these games. Stretch, happy Thanksgiving to you. Hope it's been a good one with your family and friends. But we got to get straight to this. It's a late night. Jerry had a lot to say after the game, and not all of it was football related. But Stretch, you know, Cowboys end up winning this thing big. It was unlike the previous game against the Vikings, though. They trailed 13-7 at the half. And then, of course, they got it rolling, 3 straight drives. So I guess I kind of wanted your overall thought. The good is they can get on a roll and run you out of a game. Okay. And we saw that with them jumping up, you know, 28-13. And end up winning the thing 28-20 because the Giants got a late touchdown. But the fact that they put themselves in this situation down 13-7 at halftime, there was a lot of just kind of sloppiness, turnovers, but penalties. But in particular, Dak has the throws, it gets picked off over on the sideline. And then he throws a ball into traffic a little bit, ball's tipped, and that ball gets intercepted as well. How much concern? Like, what was your overall take on the quarterback's play today?
I mean, he it's inconsistent. It's the same thing that we've seen in my mind for a while now. I mean, it's like a golfer who can go out and shoot 65 and he might go shoot 78. I mean, it's just kind of that's kind of the feel. I mean, it was very frustrating watching him throw that comeback over there for a pick. And then it was like more frustrating watching him for about the third or fourth time this year try to press the football into the seam window and get it picked. Now then, I'm going to say this. I mean, you know, Wink Martindale lines up in a bunch of different, what I call, you know, walk around blitz looks where he'll be playing zero coverage. But he's gonna get in a situation where he's gonna gamble with you some. And to me, the quarterback's got to quit turning the football over if this team wants to go where they can go. And I think they can go there. I want to start by saying I'm going to tell you something. The positive for me is these tight ends. I mean, I think Ferguson and Hendershot are really good athletic players. I mean, you watch Ferguson, you know, up the boundary, hurdle that guy. You watch Hendershot take the jet sweep from the tight end position and just walk it in the end zone. And we've seen him do some things. You watch Schultz continue to run a sail or a, you know, a seven route for the touchdown. There's so many things that I think the tight ends do, and they block the perimeter really well. Now I'm going to say this. What frustrated me is what the hell do you think running a pass protection and lining Schultz up over Thibodeau, what do you think is going to happen there? I mean, I don't like some of the things that they continue to do from a protection standpoint. And again, in, you know, I look at the first series of the game, they run jet sweep to Lamb for 12. They run an option route to Lamb for 9. Then they run a seven route incomplete. They run a slant incomplete. And it was second and one, third and one, and fourth and one. And they get absolutely stuffed on the fourth and one. And so it's almost like they, Kellen Moore gets away from what continues in my mind to be a really good game plan. You had to take a lot of what they did against Minnesota and carry it this week because you just don't have enough practice time to do those things. So part of me says I like what he does. And I'm talking about Kellen Moore with the use of the tight ends. And then part of me says, was the Dallas team not really dialed in with the pre-snap penalties? With the, again, you get down in the red zone and you have those legal procedure. I mean, it's frustrating from that standpoint. So yeah. I think it comes in with this quarterback who is very inconsistent, and that's the concern that I have. When you grade the backs, I mean, the backs ran their ass off. They protected. I mean, you know, you give the backs an A. You give the tight ends an A. You give the receivers a B+. I mean, I thought there were some really good things done by them. You give the offensive line a B because, again, pre-snap penalties. And you give the quarterback, you know, the I for being inconsistent. I mean, you're just inconsistent.
All right. That's interesting. And you know, the recipe generally is to keep his attempts kind of under 30. I think he did surpass that 30 mark. And he made some really good throws. And you're right, he had some head-scratching moments. On that wide receiver topic, Gallup really is starting to get his legs up under him. Dak talked about that after the game and do some nice things. And then, of course, today was a really good day from CeeDee Lamb. Jerry said after the game that today he talked to Odell Beckham Jr. I think the tricky part here, Stretch, is that we still don't have a great feel for where he is physically. You know, like, again, how quickly could he help you? When you watch a performance like today and like last week's, and see all the, you know, a lot of the production from the wide receivers. Do you feel like it would be well worth it if Jerry could reach a deal with Odell Beckham Jr.? Like, how much could he help this offense if he is right physically?
I mean, obviously they need another receiver. I think Noah Brown is a tough guy. I mean, I like what he does from a blocking standpoint, but they've got to have another big play, stretch the field, get through the middle of the field guy. And so I have no issue with that. I go back though, Matt, and I'll ask you this. I mean, would you, if you're in Will McClay's shoes, I mean, wouldn't you want to still have Amari Cooper?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, I mean, to me, a healthy Amari Cooper versus what feels like a gambling situation from a health perspective with OBJ. Now, I don't know money-wise what OBJ would, is going to come in here and cost them. I don't know. I believe Cooper's number was around 20, but, you know, I can only imagine what this offense would be doing with Amari Cooper, and I do think they miss him, and so I'm going to get on to saying this again. They need another big play receiver. I just don't understand because they had one and they just kind of let him go.
Yeah, and it turned out to be some sort of financial reasons given, but they're going to end up having to pay Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, it's not like he's going to come in here for nothing or come in for on the minimum, and they're going to have to come up with something. And the other interesting thing, Stretch, just for our audience to know and for you to know, is that Jerry was not convinced. He was asked, do you think he can help you this season? And Jerry basically was like, well, we got to see how he is physically. I mean, obviously that's the hope, but Jerry wasn't ready to commit to that. Now, Cowboys win this thing 28-20. But for the most part, I mean, the defense did get gashed on a couple of big plays. One in particular comes to mind, that Darius Slayton made a really nice catch on a deep ball. In the first half, they were giving up some runs to Daniel Jones. But overall, just from the front, you know, Micah Parsons continues to have big games, had another two sacks. What did you think about the way the front played the run and then also the pass rush today?
Well, I mean, again, they're really good pass rushers. And all of them are good pass rushers. I mean, Armstrong is a good pass rusher. Lawrence is a good pass rusher. The inside guys, Diggy Zoo, I mean, they can all get after the quarterback. And then obviously we know what Parsons can do. And when you have an open end, again, that's not a tight end attached. In the NFL, that guy's got a really, really tough job to do against Parsons. And you'll see them, they'll shift Parsons around to kind of get him to that open end because he's so fast that he can come from that five technique and turn that corner and give you so many issues or cause your quarterback to step up. I think the defense is really playing well. The guy that stood out to me today was Van Der Esch. I mean, he was – flying around. He was getting after it. He was physical at the point of attack. He was doing some things. You're seeing the safeties, I think, that are getting so much more involved. And Kelvin Joseph, I mean, this is a bigger, more physical secondary than we've seen here in a long time. And so when you have those guys who again, they can tackle on the perimeter, and I think obviously they were challenged by that. And when they start filling those gaps and those stay safety start coming in there, they're as good a defense as there is in my mind right now in the NFL. And that's what gives you the chance, to win and to win big. And I'm saying that because you can they flat will get after the quarterback, and that's the key. I mean, I think Diggs is a really good player, a smart player. I like seeing Brown back out there. Now the guy went over the top of him and got that football. But I think he'll continue to get better with playing time after he's been out a little bit. And then I like the fact that Joseph got that playing time. And so you got guys you can roll in there just like you do on the defensive side where you can roll those guys in there.
Yeah, Joseph out today, but you know the guy Bland stepped in there and for the most part did some good work. The penalties, were the guys just getting a little grabby? There was one that negated an interception, and then of course they called Diggs for a for illegal contact. Quite honestly, they were calling it both sides, a lot of illegal contact. Was this just a crew that was kind of calling everything, or did you think the secondary did get a little grabby today for the Cowboys?
I mean, they all do. I mean, they all are going to – they're all going to grab. They're all going to try to slow you down a little bit. I mean, that's just part of – again, that's just part of the game. You made the comment, does this officiating crew maybe call it a little tighter? You know, personally – if it affects the play and if the ball's gone that direction, I mean, to me, I think you call it. But when it's not and it's just, you know, guys kind of hand fighting, I thought they let a few of those calls go today too. So, again, it you know, we had inconsistency with the Dallas quarterback. We had inconsistency with the officiating, I thought, and how they were, you know, how they were calling the game.
All right. It was good to see some of your WFAA folks out here. Rebecca Lopez in the press box today. She does part of the call-in show with you. And you know what, Stretch, it's been kind of fun hearing that call-in show on WFAA that Mike Leslie's involved with, that some folks that listen to us call in, and they listen to the Doomsday podcast. And I know you interacted with some of them, so that was good. And Joe Trahan, a man who's worked for 26 straight days, Stretch, showed up today. Showed up today in the press box. Okay. There are no days off. They're at WFAA. So good stuff from them. Stretch, any parting shots from you? Any overall thoughts? I mean, you as the Cowboys now have a little bit of a mini bye, they can rest for a little bit, get their feet back under them. It's always been a nice advantage the Cowboys have to always be on home at home on Thanksgiving. They handle it every year, so they're a little bit better equipped than most teams to do that. I think at 8-3, you got to feel pretty good about where they are.
Well, I mean, there's no question about it, and I think as a Cowboys fan, you know, there's a lot to be thankful for. Obviously, Thanksgiving and families and Cowboys, and when they win, they make it a little better. I'll say this, Matt, just studying and what I'm studying and what I'm looking at, you know, and I think we got to start kind of talking about this is, you know, I really truly believe there's only one team in the NFC that the Cowboys, I think, would struggle with right now. And it's the 49ers. So I'd like to see the 49ers in the championship game. Now the question is, how do you get yourself in position to get to that NFC championship game? The Cowboys, let's make no mistake about it. And I think you know me well enough to know this. I mean, I'm not a big, Cowboys Kool-Aid drinker. I'm not on the wagon, off the wagon. I do believe this is the best football team that the Cowboys have had in a long time. And I think they have every opportunity to go deep into the playoffs and to maybe win this thing. Now, they've got to cut out the interceptions and they've got to cut out the pre-snap penalties. And if they do that and then avoid playing the 49ers for a little while, Matt, I mean, I think that's a lot to be thankful for. And I know where you're going with this. You're going to want to tell me about all the Miller Lights you drank today on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you know me. It's a good Baptist Thanksgiving. Not a lot of that shows up. But, man, is there anything better this time of year? And, you know, there's some light beers that don't have that much taste. Miller Light, Stretch, does not have that problem. But Miller Lite, light on calories, not taste, because what's the point in having a brew if you can't taste it, okay? And I tell you, it's kind of like you don't feel that full. You know, Stretch, you had a great Thanksgiving today. Boy, you know, what a cool thing that you get to be around your mom, your son. You got a great girlfriend. I mean, there's a lot of awesome things that you're a part of. But one of the great things about Miller Lite is, Stretch, you can get the turkey, the dressing, all the sides, and you don't feel so full. And you know, all these wine drinkers, good gosh, the next morning they feel awful. You don't get that with the Miller Lite, do you?
No, you don't get it with a Miller Lite, and you don't get that, you don't get that tongue that looks like Barney drinking that purple wine, Mosley. So yeah, it's you know, there's nothing like a the smooth, relaxing taste of Miller Lite. It's time to turn the page and get on to the holidays, Mosley. We got Christmas coming up, baby.
Yeah, and Miller Lite's great for Christmas time. Stretch, do you have the fire pit out tonight? I mean, like, if you were gonna, what's your number one option if you're gonna be with some pals and maybe have a few Miller Lights, maybe even back.
Oh, I'm gonna go chill out on the inside tonight. I wish it wasn't. Wish it wasn't damp. I'd get out on the back porch and flip it on outside. But I'm gonna kind of hunker around the living room tonight, and you know, I may have myself one more cold Miller Lite before it's time to shut her down. I'm gonna watch the Vikings and the Patriots tee it up.
Yeah. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, Stretch, visit MillerLite.com/doomsday, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Stretch, appreciate you. Always enjoy doing this. Have a blessed holiday. And my Bears versus your Longhorns, getting it on at 11 a.m. tomorrow on Black Friday. So best of luck, but we cannot talk until about 3 or 4 tomorrow afternoon.
That'll be fine, Mosley. And when it happens, I'm going to put you in a damn wrestling hold. It might be the figure four leg lock for you. See you later.
There is no way I would ever tap out. I've never done it, and I won't start now. It is Stretch Plays with Glenn Stretch Smith. All right, it is the Doomsday Podcast, and appreciate Stretch there. Stretch was, for the most part, pretty pleased with everybody. He gave a couple of B's on offense. I'm trying to remember who he gave a B to. Maybe the O-line, because some of the penalties and that kind of thing. I thought one of
Tyler
his toughest.
Smith, Zach Martin had a holding penalty today. That's nearly historic. It's only the sixth one of his career, and it was a ridiculous call. It should have never been called.
Not a great call. Stretch did give Dak Prescott an incomplete today, which is pretty tough, but he did throw those two picks. So he did get the eye, the dreaded eye from Stretch. All right. Ed, on the defensive side of the ball, they were kind of grabby. I mean, this may have been a crew, and I thought the by the way, the Giants came in, and with this the crew chief here, they were 0-3. The Cowboys were 1-2, according to our friend Rick Goose Goslin, coming into this game, and there were a ton of penalties called in this game. Cowboys had a interception by, was that Wilson, negated
Donovan Wilson
by
Trayvon
an illegal
Diggs
contact.
Had a penalty. Yeah, Trayvon Diggs had a penalty.
Yeah, so there was some of that going on, but again, the pass rush, especially when they needed to dial it up, which was primarily in the second half, did show up, and Micah Parsons with another two sacks. I think I was reading your Twitter, Ed, and it's kind of funny that in piling up his 12 sacks now total for the season, like, he never just has one sack. Like, it's all how many two sack games has he had? Six to get to 12.
He said six two sack games, no one sack games this year. And and by the way, now tied with all these games remaining, he's already tied Alden Smith for the most multi sack games through a player's first two seasons since sacks became official in 1982. He separated himself from Sean Merriman and Reggie White today, moving himself into sole possession of second place. Or of first place, tied with Alden Smith for the most for a player this year. It's pretty amazing. And, you know, the pressure, Daniel Jones, we saw what they did to him up percent of his dropbacks and have now pressured opposing quarterbacks on 40.1% of their pass attempts this season. And since ESPN began tracking pressures in 2009, no team has achieved a 40% success rate at this point in the season.
Whoa, Ed. I like it when you bring us things like that. Wait, what year did you say they started tracking pressures?
2009.
Oh, yeah. I was still there. I think I was the one who started tracking that for them.
You said this might be an interesting statistic. We should start keeping track of it. Pressures, not sacks. Pressures. Most coaches think pressures are an underrated stat, by the way. Everybody talks about sacks. Pressures are really important, though.
Yeah, and sometimes, like on one of those, it was Micah had to, you know, cause the quarterback to step up, and then somebody else ended up with the sack. Speaking of sacks, Dorrance Armstrong, who nobody made a big deal out of them re-signing him, but now it's kind of funny that Randy Gregory, who went to Denver, and now everybody's looking to see what Gregory does this season, because of course they ended up paying him quite a bit. I mean, you may all know off the top of your head, it was a $75 million contract. I mean, it was a pretty big number.
And top of the market for sure. Yeah.
Dorrance Armstrong, I think, got 2 years, $12 million. And he's now sitting at 8 sacks on the season. Had another one today. And last, I think we checked on Gregory. I think he's sitting on 2 sacks. So
Gregory's never had more than 6 in his career. So
yeah,
Dorrance Armstrong has already surpassed with his own career high the highest number that Randy Gregory ever achieved in all his years with the Cowboys. Some of which he was not allowed to play. So I seem to recall.
Yeah, yeah. But I thought Vander Esch was really good today. You know, obviously they hit one huge play, 44-yard play, where Darius Slayton made a great play. You know, honestly, Anthony Brown was in pretty good position, and then he went up and just made a nice play. You know, kind of right on top of Anthony Brown on that one. Ed, for the most part, I think the defense did its job, and I, other than save a kind of a meaningless late touchdown by the Giants.
Well, I think the defense was. I think Dan Quinn was a little uncertain as to, you know, what he was going to be, which players he was going to have today because of this virus that's been, you know, going through the Cowboys locker room all week. They had, I think, 7 players on defense who were questionable coming into the game and 2 who were doubtful. And one of them was Donovan Wilson, who played. You know, they had Tank McKinley. They just signed him a couple weeks ago for depth. They had him up and available for the game today because they didn't know when the players came over here. Mike McCarthy actually said after the game, the situation was, you know, serious enough that they asked players to come in early today so they had a better sense of who could do what, how they were feeling, and, you know, anybody who needed an IV pregame could get one. But they wanted to have a real clear sense of what everybody felt like they were physically capable of doing given the illness that they've recently had. And, you know, Tank Lawrence was one of those guys. And he's able to play. He's obviously been a big problem for the Giants in recent games. So I think based on that, I think you have to be pretty impressed with what they did. I honestly thought that given the Giants' problems on the offensive line without 3 starters and given Daniel Jones' history, you know, he's now 1-6 against the Cowboys. And is now he's been better at protecting the ball this year than he has, you know, at any other point in his career. But I really thought that there would be more havoc and maybe some more turnovers. And instead, this becomes a game where the Cowboys get no turnovers on defense. That was a little surprising to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's an interesting one. And I thought, Ed, interesting note on your virus report, the Cowboys started wearing masks during the week. It was going such in a rampant way around the building. And of course, this was a quick turnaround that they went back to wearing masks, which I thought was a nice, perhaps a way to honor Dr. Fauci on his last week before retirement.
I don't know. Mike McCarthy really probably doesn't have pleasant memories of the pandemic since it was his first year here and they went 6-10.
Yeah. And was it last season that Mike actually missed a game with COVID?
Yeah. When they went to New Orleans last year, Dan Quinn stepped in and led them to victory in that situation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're right.
All right. All right. Well, Ed, before we say goodnight, and because we're the last people, well, I bet there's some writers still up there kind of hammering away, trying to polish off some great columns. This is a Cowboys now have a kind of a nice little mini bye. Players will probably get a little time off here, come back and start preparing for this. And everything's kind of headed now, Ed. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but Christmas Eve, the Eagles coming to town. I mean, who knows what the records will be at that point, but the Eagles have looked a little shaky. And the Cowboys obviously had the setback against Green Bay, but have bounced back nicely now. And so there's no telling what that Christmas Eve game could be for. And Ed, the great news is you and I have both been credentialed the rest of the season. We'll be out here together. I had no problem. I had no problem, Ed. You're a game-to-game guy, but I think we both, it's going to be fine. We're going to both be out here together. What were you going to say? What was your joke?
I was going to say, I was going to say, you know, you're right. The Eagles have, you know, they lost 2 weeks ago. They came within they almost lost to the Colts, who are the Cowboys' next opponents. They beat the Colts at the end of a game by a point. But look at the Cowboys' schedule now. They play the Colts, the Texans, and the Jaguars before they get another shot at the Eagles with Dak Prescott at quarterback. So the Cowboys should be 11-3 when they play the Eagles in a game that for all likelihood is going to determine the winner of the division. And who's going to have that first round bye and get to stay home and play their first playoff game as opposed to who's going to go on the road and have to play an extra game to try to get to the Super Bowl. But I mean, you're talking about the Cowboys finished first. They're supposed to have this incredibly difficult schedule. They're going to play the Colts, the Texans, and the Jaguars in succession. That's as good as it gets.
I got to say, I've been impressed with one of the most unqualified NFL coaches in history, Jeff Saturday. I'm worried about the Colts. You never know what the Colts could pull off. But anyway, Ed, happy Thanksgiving to you. Please give Jill my best. Please give the kids my best. And have a great evening. And we love doing the Doomsday Podcast. Appreciate your efforts and everything you brought to the table this evening. And have a great, great little break here. In fact, I think Ed's going to maybe see some family in Colorado. That'll be so much fun. And for Ed, and for Mark Frito Friedman, Frito Nation Productions, I am Matt Mosley saying good night from AT&T Stadium.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.